Hello, I am Bill Funt. This is number 0582, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0582. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Kevin Beresford, who is the founder of the Roundabout Appreciation Society. He takes pictures and sells calendars of roundabouts in the UK. How did this all start?
It started when I ran a small company, a printing company in Redditch. Redditch is a small town, but it's a new town, and it hasn't got a lot going for it. But what it did have was a copious amount of roundabouts. And just for fun, just for a laugh, we thought we'd produce a calendar, Roundabouts of Redditch. Little did we realise that calendar sold round the world. I did numerous TV interviews, radio interviews. That in turn spurned the Best of British Roundabouts. And it was then when I got really interested in roundabouts.
Steve McChesney is a former stuntman who is now a marketing expert and the author of Rearranging Change. He got into the business with a little help from Bonanza's Lauren Green.
Because when I was a kid, I used to go to the Bonanza set, I snuck in to Universal, to the Battlestar Galactica set, and I went up to Mr. Green and I said, "You probably don't remember me, but when I was a kid, I used to come to the Bonanza set," and he went, "Stevie?" And I went, "Yeah!" And it was great. And then he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm in stunt school and I'm trying to become a stuntman." And he goes, "Do you have your Screen Actors Guild card yet?" And I said, "No." And he called over the assistant director and he said, "Give this man a stunt on this show. I wanted to get a SAG card." So that's how I broke into it.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter goes back to experience the baby boomer days of chills and thrills with Stephen Paul Leyva's Creature Feature. So get ready for a very scary time very soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0582, was Bill Funt, who is a writer, producer, performer, and a teacher who has his master's in education, by the way. He's also a very funny guy. And oh yeah, he's the son of Alan Funt, the mastermind behind the classic TV show Candid Camera. Thank you very much, Bill, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? The RCMP in Summerland, British Columbia, are on the lookout for a hiker on a trail. He apparently likes to hike without wearing any clothing. They don't know who he is, but Mounties suggest witnesses take a photograph of him in the hopes of identifying him. Hey, you with a camera. The face is up here. Where exactly was he spotted, you ask? Glad you asked. He was spotted on Mount Conkle's Full Frontal Loop Trail. Well, no one could say they weren't warned, huh? Perhaps it's time to rename that trail. Now, over the years on this show, I have shared a myriad of zero-tolerance stories involving the idiocy of what gets people expelled from school. It's been a while since I've had one, but this item is the doosiest of doozies. 9-year-old fourth grader Ka Moiri Harrison was sitting in on a virtual class from his bedroom for Woodmere Elementary School in Harvey, Louisiana, when his younger brother walked into the room, tripping over a BB gun on the floor. Ka Moiri reached over and took the unloaded gun away from his brother, putting it next to him for safety. But his teacher saw it, and he was disconnected from the class. By the end of the day, he was suspended from school. This is a violation of weapons in the classroom setting and a violation of the internet usage policy, a Jefferson Parish Public School System report said. He will be recommended for expulsion as per JPPSS policy. The suspension was upheld by a school system hearing officer who also made the decision that Ka Moiri not be permanently expelled. Neither Ka Moiri nor his parents were allowed to speak at the hearing. They are treating it as if he had brought a weapon to school, his father said, his father being Nyron Harrison, who bought the gun for the boy to teach him gun safety. It's not ending here, vowed the family's attorney, Chelsea Cusimano. The family is considering a lawsuit against the school district. Well, we now just learned that virtual zero tolerance is just as stupid as the in-person kind. Yeah. 30-year-old Justin Anthony Garcia of Lehigh Acres, Florida, landed in the Lee County Jail on September 27th on charges of aggravated battery following a heated argument over which is better, whole milk or almond milk. Deputies of the Lee County Sheriff's Office were called to the scene after the disagreement between two cousins escalated from verbal to physical, eventually ending with Garcia drawing a pocket knife and chasing his cousin through the front yard, cutting him on the torso. An uncle intervened and separated the two until deputies arrived, but the arrest complaint does not say which type of milk Garcia prefers. Well, I'm a huge milk drinker myself. I prefer 2%. Plus, have you ever tried to milk an almond? That's time-consuming. An aggressive Muscovy duck named Bob in Mansfield, England, has terrorized postman Steve Hines to the point that Hines has refused to deliver mail to the duck's owners until they contain him. Hines said, the duck started hissing at me and it ran me up the path, snapping its beak. The apologetic owners left a crunchy candy bar as a peace offering for Hines and a note reading, he used to be lovely and cuddly, now he's a vicious sex maniac. We have fenced him in and hopefully he won't escape. But 2 days later, Bob escaped the fence and came after Hines again. At press time, the standoff continues. Now, I don't profess to be psychic or anything, but with all the horrible things that have taken place in 2020, from pandemics to killer forest fires to killer storms to murder hornets, I did say at the beginning of the summer that the only thing left to deal with this year would be sodomizing geese. Well, it's beginning. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Hotels.com is offering one lucky customer the opportunity to live under a rock to escape election stress disorder during election week in the United States, which runs from November the 2nd to the 7th. The accommodations in a man-made cave 50 feet below ground in New Mexico will cost just $5 per night, said Josh Belkin, vice president of Hotels.com. Political fatigue is real, regardless of the year or election. He went on to say, who knows what else 2020 has in store for us? Well, again, I remind you of the sodomizing geese. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Calling himself Britain's dullest man, Kevin Beresford of Redditch is the founder of the Roundabout Appreciation Society and has traveled all over the country for the past 17 years, searching for the best traffic circles, which he memorializes in calendars with photos of his favorites. He's the self-described Lord of the Rings, and he joins us on the line via Skype from the UK. Hi, Kevin.
Greetings from the UK.
Thanks for being on the program with us. I happened to see the story of you and your calendar and thought, oh, I've got to give you a call because this is literally a man over after my own heart. How did this all start for you 17 years ago?
It started when I ran a small company, a printing company in Redditch. Now, Redditch is a small town, but it's a new town, and It hasn't got a lot going for it, but what it did have was a copious amount of roundabouts. And just for fun, just for a laugh, we thought we'd produce a calendar, Roundabouts of Redditch. Little did we realise that calendar sold around the world. I did numerous TV interviews, radio interviews, and that in turn spurned the Best of British Roundabouts. And it was then when I got really interested in roundabouts. Now we do Roundabouts of the World now. So that's our most ambitious project to date.
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've traveled all around the country for the past 17 years. Have you traveled beyond British shores to check out roundabouts?
Oh, yes, indeed. Every time I'm on holiday, I'll always go out and take photos, especially in Spain and France. They've got some of the fantastic roundabouts. A lot of people think roundabouts is a British invention, but it's not. It was invented really in New York City, the first one being Columbus Circle. It was the French, really, that took up the idea. And they've got something like 35,000 roundabouts now, as opposed to 25,000 roundabouts that Britain has. But the old beauty of a roundabout is you can put anything on a roundabout. They're so expressive. I've seen fountains, statues, trains, boats, planes. Up in York here in England, we have a windmill, a working windmill on a roundabout that actually produces flour. Can you believe that? And in America, their house is a parliament on a roundabout. And in Wellington in New Zealand, they've got their national cricket ground on a roundabout. So there you have it. You can put anything on a roundabout, and I think it's that what makes them so special. In fact, it gives any local council brimming with a degree of civic pride the perfect opportunity to plonk a garden in the middle of a road junction. Now, how green is that? Much greener than traffic lights. There's no green in traffic lights, only red. That's what I like to say. But we view a roundabout as an oasis on a sea of tarmac.
Oh, I like that. An oasis on a sea of tarmac. That is actually poetic.
Yes, indeed.
Now, I'm also a photographer, so I appreciate photography, quite frankly, of the mundane. I'm the kind of person who will walk around my neighborhood and take a close-up shot of a fence if I find it interesting, because that's what photographers do. So I don't see this as being as odd as some people might think that it is, but have you had people looking at you askew when you tell them who you are and what you do?
Of course, but when you think about it, artists have always focused on the mundane. You've got over here in England, Tracy Emin's On My Bed. You had the Campbell's Tin of Soup, Andy Warhol's Tin of Soup, and even Van Gogh would just paint a pipe on a chair. So, yes, I think artists do focus on the mundane, so there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, you've branched out a little bit beyond doing just the traffic circles. You've done other things as well that you've been photographing. Car parks is another one, right?
Yes, indeed, yeah. I'm the president of the Car Park Appreciation Society. But unlike the Roundabout Appreciation Society, I'm the only one in the Car Park Appreciation Society. Nobody wants to join this society, but I don't care.
Well, let's go back to the Roundabout Appreciation Society. How many people are in that group?
We meet on a regular basis in a local pub in Redditch, and there's about 30 of us. Obviously, with the COVID virus, we haven't been able to really get together this year. But I have roundabout enthusiasts from all around the world, and they all like to send me their favourite one-way gyrating. So we have enthusiasts from everywhere, all around the globe.
Do you yourself have a favourite roundabout?
I do indeed, yes. I mean, each year I discover new ones, if you like. The roundabout of the year this year is the Flanders roundabout down in Kent, and it depicts a World War One quite poignant really scene where you've got 8 British soldiers surrounding a World War One tank. And even the trees have been planted from Flanders. Everything, it's such a beautiful scene. And it's just one more example of the way you can put anything on a roundabout. And at the moment, I would say that is. But there's a fish there's a national fish pond down in Otford in Kent. It's a listed duck pond, on a roundabout. And in the middle of that roundabout, in a pond, there's a little house for the ducks, and the locals call it Duckingham Palace. It's so quaint and quintessentially English in its appearance.
You have a website, which is roundaboutsofbritain.com. When people go there, what will they find?
Oh, sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. I see all my calendars that I do postbox calendars, telephone box calendars, obviously roundabouts. I even do Her Majesty's Prisons roundabouts, Her Majesty's Prisons calendar, sorry. So it's quite a diverse sort of site, you know. And you'll be tickled pink if anybody wants to go on there. It's an amusing website.
Now, as you just mentioned, you branched out. We talked about car parks, but you've also done telephone boxes. What else have you done?
Post boxes, even milk bottles. I know a milk bottle collector that's got 20,000 milk bottles in his house. Can you believe this? And he let me shoot 12 of his favourite milk bottles. Oh, God. I even did an insane asylums calendar, the ones which sold pretty good, really. And also a roadkill calendar. I sold roadkill calendar, but that didn't sell very well at all.
Wow. One of the things I find fascinating, too, is that when this all first took off for you, it's because you did an appearance on what is one of my favorite shows, and that is Graham Norton's.
That's correct, yes. It was the very first calendar we produced, the Roundabouts of Redditch. And he showed it on his show, obviously taking the mickey out of it, which we didn't mind. We didn't mind at all. And once that was shown on his show, the sales went off like a skyrocket.
How long ago was that?
2003. That dates back to. I've even written two books on roundabouts as well. And it's an easy hobby, roundabout spotting. All you need is a camera on your phone, a notebook, a flask, and an anorak. That's all you need.
Now, since you've become this sort of expert on roundabouts, do people actually come to you before they decide that they want to create a roundabout in some locale, because you've got all the documentation and pictures of all these places that can give them an idea of what they might want to do in their own municipality?
Yes, I have all sorts of offers. I did have a roundabout architect. In fact, it was him that put forward this Flanders roundabout. And we got into all sorts of wonderful discussions on this roundabout. I offer advice, but I'm not an expert in the technicalities of the roundabout, how it functions. I like the aesthetic qualities of the roundabout. That's what appeals to me.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and people can also go to your website and order calendars as well. So that's great, because, you know, we're getting near the end of the year. You might want the 2021 calendar. Is that ready to go, by the way?
Yes, indeed. They're all ready to go. Christmas is looming. Perfect gift.
And how much do they cost, roughly?
£9.99.
£9.99 in pound sterling. Great. Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being on the show with us.
My pleasure, too.
Kevin Beresford, the founder of the Roundabout Appreciation Society. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0582, and you'll find links to Kevin's site where you can check out his blog, see pictures, and order a calendar or two. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to a former stuntman, plus Stuart Nullman will be in with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere for all your devices, such as Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. You can also find it on several radio stations, such as WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, WLSL, LPFM in Dade City, Florida, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and CKLU 96.7 FM in Sudbury, and also CKHR Hay River in the Northwest Territories, just to name a few of the radio stations that play the Stuff File program. Thanks to all for joining in. Don't touch that dial. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? A Japanese buyer with very precise requirements has paid a record $14,000 for a 22-pound traditional Iberian ham. Julio Revilla, president of Sierra Mayor Jabugo in Cortecepcion, Spain, said the ham was produced according to the buyer's strict instructions. It had to come from an Iberian pig at least 2 years old that had grazed on a diet of only acorns and herbs in the mountains of Sierra Mayor for at least 100 days. The pig was slaughtered in 2015, and the ham was then cured for 5 years, twice the amount of time for a typical premium ham. It was delivered to the buyer in September, who was also awarded with a Guinness World Record certificate. You know, I read this, and all I can think about is opening up a can of Spam. Now, that's a very precise order. I'm surprised the Japanese buyer didn't ask for the educational background of the pig and also its references. I'd also like to know what he's eating it with. I don't think he's making ham and cheese sandwiches with Kraft singles. Yeah. According to a report by the Surrey, UK Roads Policing Unit, officers were called to the M25 highway between Junction 6 and Clackett Lane at 1:30 a.m. following reports of a female falling out of a moving vehicle. She had skidded to a stop in a traffic lane. And when I say she skidded, I'm not talking about the car. She, on pavement, herself. How did it happen? Well, accident investigators say the woman was hanging out of the window to take a Snapchat video. The woman was treated by paramedics at the scene, the agency spokesperson said, and her injuries were not life-threatening or life-changing. Well, whoa, wait a second here. I'm glad her injuries aren't life-threatening, but let's at the very least hope that they're life-changing. I mean, let's hope she's learned not to do anything that stupid ever again. This is a Darwin File starter kit, if ever I've seen one. In June, Connecticut State Police investigating a December armed robbery outside the Golden Palace Chinese restaurant in Norwich arrived at the Corrigan Correctional Center in Montville to obtain a DNA sample from 38-year-old Gregory Blue, who first accused police of planting his DNA at the scene of the robbery before telling them a phlebotomist who took his blood years ago dropped his DNA at the scene via airplane. Wow, I'm just impressed that he knows what a phlebotomist is. Investigators had found blood at the scene of the robbery and on hats the unidentified 45-year-old victim said had been left by the assailant. The DNA samples matched according to the arrest warrant, and on September 25th, Blue was charged with first-degree robbery and second-degree assault. You know, some people can just lie right to your face with some of the most outlandish tales, and they'll do it with complete conviction.
I'm a senior. I know you don't know that. Nobody knows that. Maybe you don't have to tell them, but I'm a senior.
Oh, and he's a perfect human specimen, too. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 41-year-old Larry Strothers and 31-year-old Jason Rappa were arrested on September 26th in Largo, Florida, and charged with strong-arm robbery after allegedly stealing a prosthetic leg. Police say they were called by the victim after Strothers and Rappa confronted him over a stolen backpack, and in the course of the fight, a prosthetic leg was taken from the victim. Court records did not reveal the whereabouts of said leg. Well, I guess he's out of a limb. He's coming up short. Which reminds me, I went to an archaeology party recently where they were only looking for remains of a lower leg. Yeah, it was a shindig.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, shut up. You're two-dimensional. Jeez, everyone's a critic. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Steve McChesney knows what it is to put his life on the line for the sake of entertainment. As a Hollywood stuntman, actor, or extra, he appeared in more than 350 TV shows and movies. He earned a living falling off of high places, being knocked off of walls, and performing stunts in automobiles. Steve is now a marketing expert and the author of Rearranging Change, How You Market to an Ever-Changing World. He also has a podcast with the same name. Steve joins us via Skype from Florida. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Peter. How are you, my friend?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So let's go back a little bit to your days as a Hollywood stunt performer. How did that come to be, and what did your parents think when you decided, you know, you want to do this for a living?
My mother used to say that I got high on my own adrenaline, and I think she had a point there. I grew up in Hollywood, and when I got out of school, when I was in elementary school, I used to sneak into the studios and watch them filming. So I always kind of loved it, but then as I became an adult, I went in the Army, got out of the Army, went to a stunt school. My stunt teacher was Kim Kahana. He was Charles Bronson's stunt double. And Kim was trying to teach me how to sneak into the studios to sell myself. And I told him that's the part I already had down. I learned that as a kid. So I did. I actually snuck into the studios. I got my first stunt job on a show called Battlestar Galactica. It was starring Lauren Green. It was the original, not the later one. This is way back in the late 1970s. And because when I was a kid, I used to go to the Bonanza set, I snuck in to Universal, to the Battlestar Galactica set, and I went up to Mr. Green, and I said, you probably don't remember me, but when I was a kid, I used to come to the Bonanza set, and he went, Stevie? And I went, yeah, and it was great. And then he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm in stunt school, and I'm trying to become a stuntman. And he goes, do you have your Screen Actors Guild card yet? And I said, no. And he called over the assistant director, and he said, give this man a stunt on this show. I want him to get a SAG card. So that's how I broke into it. Did about 350 shows. I worked on a lot of good stuff. I got hurt. That's what ended my career. But while I was doing the work, one of my greatest memories was I was on the movie Star Trek VI, and that movie was the last movie that the original cast was in. And I didn't know it at the time, but they used to give us call sheets, and the call sheet would tell you what time to be on the set the next day to, you know, report for wardrobe and makeup. And I'd look at the call sheet, find my time, and throw it away, just like everybody else did. Well, find out years later at Star Trek conventions, those call sheets are selling for over $1,000 a piece because it was the last one that the original cast did.
Wow.
Hindsight.
What was the most fun gig and most fun stunt that you had to perform?
Well, you know, all of them were for me. Like I said, like my mother said, I get high on my own adrenaline. But one of the things that I really liked was doing high falls, you know, where you fall off of buildings. And you know, when you're up 20 or 30 feet and you're looking down at an airbag and it looks like the size of a postage stamp and there's a little red square in the middle of that bag and that's where you've got to hit. And when you're standing there getting ready to go and as soon as that director says action, I mean, you got to go. But right before that word action comes out, I just feel my whole body shaking. And not so much from fear, but just the adrenaline that was rushing through. But I do know that once I hit that bag, first thing I want to do is do it again because it's a lot of fun.
I've often wondered when it comes to those high falls, how concerned do you have to be with any kind of wind?
Well, obviously, yeah, you definitely have to be concerned, but 20 and 30 feet is really not that high. When you start getting into the daredevilism, a lot of my stunt pals were daredevils more than they were stuntmen. People like Dar Robinson and A.J. Baconis, those guys were always going for a high fall record. And I don't know if you ever saw the movie Hooper, but in that movie, Dar Robinson, you know, doubled Burt Reynolds and jumped out of a helicopter into an airbag. And that was actually a world record high fall. And that was a couple of hundred feet. Now, when you start jumping from that height, you got to worry about breezes and things like that. But I never went that high. That was just a little too crazy for me.
Dar Robinson was one of the greatest stuntmen of all time. As far as injuries are concerned, you mentioned earlier that your career ended because of an injury. What kind of injuries did you have? And what brought your career to an end?
And it was in a really low budget film. And I was thrown out of a boxing ring, and we shot it at the Olympic Auditorium in downtown Los Angeles. And that's at a cement floor, but they had a mat set for me to hit. And the guy that threw me out of the ring was a huge guy. And I saw that mat fly underneath me, and, you know, I learned tuck and roll, and I did, and I ended up doing a flip and a half and landed on my left kneecap on the cement floor, and it shattered my kneecap.
Ouch.
And I was on a cane for about 6 months after that, and I just went, that's it, I'm not doing this again. Now, all my buddies were saying, what are you, nuts? I mean, everybody, you know, they bend over backwards to break into the business. You've got what everybody's trying to get, because I was working all the time. And I said, yeah, but I don't want to go through that pain again. You know, and my buddies, all these guys, you know, Dar and AJ, and they broken every bone in their body. They're wired together, you know. I mean, but that's what they chose to do. I just was a little bit too sensitive for that. So I got out of the business. I don't regret any of it. I loved it. I got a lot of, still a lot of great stunt friends and celebrity friends. And I stayed in the business for quite a few years. I became a talent manager and represented celebrity talent. And, you know, I got into, I opened a restaurant, and I started learning more and more about marketing and marketing myself. And that's kind of what led me to write my book, Rearranging Change.
That's what I wanted to ask about, because, you know, you said that your mother referred to you as someone who got high on adrenaline. How does someone who gets high on adrenaline find happiness in marketing?
Well, you know what? I guess it comes in different forms, because I also got excited about the whole concept of marketing. When I opened my restaurant, it was all about, wow, okay, oh boy, what can I do now to get people to come to this restaurant? And I looked at different aspects and avenues and just, you know, what motivated people. And the difference between, I think, me and a lot of other guys that wrote marketing books is the fact that I don't look so much at the how, I look at the why. Why people do what they do. And that's kind of what my book is all about. But I found that exciting as well. I will tell you this, however, I have three daughters, and about 5 years ago, I'm in my 60s now, but about 5 years ago, I went to Six Flags in Georgia. And while we were in Georgia, my daughter goes, come on, Dad, let's go on this ride. And it was one of those rides you get on where you sit in a seat. It's a big tower, and it pulls you up, and then it drops you.
Right.
And I thought, that's nothing. I've done that, you know, many times. It scared me. So I think with age, adrenaline changes.
Well, you know what? I don't know if it's necessarily that adrenaline changes with age. I think it's the fact that when you were a stuntman and you were working with stunt coordinators and you were working through every single stunt, you were the one in control, as opposed to other people being in control.
That's a good point. I never thought about it that way, but I think you've got a good point there. You know, there's an old joke went around in Hollywood in the old days. You know, Westerns were the big thing where stunt guys really made their mark. But, you know, there was a director that told the actor, get on that horse and ride up over the hill and ride out of frame. And the actor said, okay, and started walking up the hill kicking rocks. And the director said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm kicking rocks out of the way so the horse doesn't stumble and I don't fall. He goes, oh, get out of here. Bring me a stuntman. Stunt guy comes out. Director says, get on that horse, ride over that hill and ride out of frame. Stunt guy says, okay. Starts walking up the hill, kicking over rocks. Safety first.
Absolutely. You've written this book for whom? Because you say you wrote it from a different perspective when it comes to marketing.
It is. I wrote this for anybody that is a copywriter, who is in graphic design, who is in any kind of marketing or sales profession. Because this book, It's not so much the how-to on sales. It is more about, like I said, the why. I talk about the five generations that are on the planet right now and the differences between them and how you talk to them a little bit differently. I talk about what motivates people. And, you know, I give examples in my book of companies that use different motivators for different reasons and why it works, because it does. I talk about communication styles. You know, not everybody needs all the details. A lot of people just want the bullet points, especially in today's day and age where we're getting bombarded with, you know, all kinds of information. So that's two different communication styles. Some people have to have the details. Some people hate the details, don't want them. So you need to know who you're talking to. So my book goes into things like that and how to talk to people.
And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you have three daughters.
Yes.
You're a former stuntman. Yep. You're in marketing. That's a deadly combination when you're talking to prospective boyfriends.
Yes, it is. Luckily, my oldest daughter is happily married to a man that I happen to love very, very much. My middle daughter, you know, she's a... I've been pulling my hair out a little bit about some of her choices, but, you know, again, she's a grown woman and she's going to make her mistakes too. And my youngest is now a lieutenant in the Navy. So she's on the right path as she goes too. But yeah, it is, you know, I was a tough guy back in the day, not so much so anymore.
It sounds like that youngest daughter is the one that takes after you the most.
She, you know what? She does. She does. One of the things I started to do when I got out of the stunt business is I actually went to work at Universal as a screenwriter for a while. And my youngest has just finished her second screenplay that she's writing. So, you know, she is taking after me.
Congratulations. As again, you know, you talk about how much of a daredevil you were when you were a kid. If any of your children came to you and said, "Dad, I want to be a stunt person," how would you have felt about that?
I would have been okay with it as long as they got the proper training. Like I said, my stunt teacher was Kim Kahana, Charles Bronson's stunt double, and Kim was really big on safety. So even high falls, when we were learning to do high falls, we'd start off by jumping even with the airbag, just kind of jumping up into the airbag. And then we go a little higher until we were 5 feet above the airbag, and then 10 feet above the airbag. Then we did 20 feet above the airbag, just so you would understand every inch you come off of that roof, it's another 2 feet you're going out before you hit that airbag. So once you start to get the idea of the safety in stunts, you know, I know a lot of stunt guys that never got training, and those were the guys that got hurt. Because they just didn't, you know, even though it's good stunt coordinators, and stunt coordinators really are good, and they're all about the safety, but some of these guys are just daredevils, and they just want to do their thing, you know. But if my girls would have wanted to do it and be safe about it, I would have been all for it. In fact, it would have been good if they wanted to, because I could have gotten them into it, because I know people.
last quick question. Someone who grew up in the stunt business, did you have a favorite stuntman growing up?
Buddy Joe Hooker. And I got, you know, the opportunity to meet him and talk with him at length when I was first starting out. And he gave me such great advice and tips on the stunt business. And he's probably one of the greatest stuntmen that ever lived. In fact, the movie Hooper was based on his life story.
How do you feel about Yakima Canute?
I'm not really too familiar with him.
He was that famous stunt where he pulls himself underneath a stagecoach and gets up on the horses.
Oh, no, I know who you're talking about. I never knew his name.
Yeah, Yakima Canute. Yeah, he's one of my favorites of all time.
That's a great, you know, those, I'm telling you, the cowboy stunt people, that's where really stunt work came into being. Those guys are just so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, the book is called Rearranging Change, How You Market to an Ever-Changing World. Steve, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. And by the way, any of your listeners, if you want a copy of my book, I'll give you a free copy. Just go to rearrangingchange.com and you get a free PDF ebook.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Former stuntman turned marketing expert Steve McChesney. As you just heard him say, you can get a free PDF copy of his book, Rearranging Change, How You Market to an Ever-Changing World, by going to his website at rearrangingchange.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And hobnobbing with the goblins, here he is, Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Who else will be hobnobbing around this time of year?
Exactly.
Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. I get the feeling they're not going to be a heck of a lot of trick-or-treaters this year.
No, they're going to be, how can I say, if they want their treats, they're going to be waiting outside for them, you know, within safe distance from the house in question.
I wonder how many people, though, who will show up dressed as the fly on the vice president's head.
Yeah, I always wanted to dress up as Seth Brundle fly, to be honest with you.
Anyway, what are we talking about this time around, sir?
Well, in this edition of Book Banter, because we did a little Halloween chat, we're going to do a book with sort of a Halloween theme to it. You know, it's called Creature Feature, by a friend of ours, Stephen Paul Leyva.
A very good friend, Stephen Paul Leyva. Stephen with a V, I may add.
Yes, that's right. Like the way my brother-in-law spells it.
A V so, between two E's.
Yes. Yes, that's right. That's the way to do it, folks.
Yeah.
Now, let's picture this, if you will. There's this popular local TV horror movie show hostess during the height of the Kennedy administration who leaves the major metropolitan center where she works for greener career pastures in New York. And on the way east, she decides to pay a brief visit to her hometown that's the epitome of typical small-town America at that time. However, she realizes that something strange is going on, not only with her family, but with practically every other humble citizen of that hamlet. A strange something that could lead to an apocalyptic something. But this is not an episode of The Twilight Zone, but a new novel called Creature Feature, which is written by veteran writer, blogger, and lifelong baby boom pop culture maven and very good friend of ours, Stephen Paul Leyva. And Creature Feature is indeed a novel that is a fond flashback to The Twilight Zone, minus Rod Serling, and those type of black and white graphic novel type stories that many teens read in such pulp type magazines as Creepy and Eerie during the 60s and 70s. Now, the story takes place in 1962, to be exact, and centers around Kathy Anderson, who hosts a horror movie TV show called Vivacia's House of Horrors under the guise of Vivacia, the vampire woman for a local TV station in Chicago. Now, Kathy has garnered quite the following as Vivacia for her baby boomer viewers who get their daily fill of movies featuring Frankenstein's monster, Dracula, the mummy, and the wolfman. But see, our young heroine, that's just not enough for her because she's a serious actress, studio-trained actress, and she believes that there must be more to success than hosting this show in Chicago. So she decides to turn in her Vivacia costume, load up her car, and head east to New York City in pursuit of a much greener, better career on the Broadway stage. Now, on her way, she stops by to pay a visit to her birthplace of Placidville, Illinois, but somehow Kathy finds out that something is not quite right. She sees it in the cold, robotic behavior of her parents, then the townsfolk, and especially Mac, the recently new arrival who is now the town's mayor. But it's up to Gerald, the rather geeky brother of Kathy's best friend, to give her the cold hard truth about what's going on in Placidville. Actually, it's slowly being invaded by aliens, like something straight out of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and have plans for the total conquest of the town. Now, strangely enough, these invaders worship Kathy's on-screen persona, Vivacia. So, would Gerald be able to convince Kathy to put on that Vivacia costume one more time for the sake of her birthplace before these strange creatures hold their convention where they will demand a rebuilt America and comfy couches?
You know, if this book becomes very popular, Vivacia could become a popular girl's name. Just wait.
Oh, it could. It could, not you like know, Vampirella, but Vivacia does, it has its potential. It really does.
You know, before Peter Pan, there were no girls named Wendy.
Yeah, and look what happened after that.
Yeah.
When it became a hit on Broadway, you know, parents started to want to call their newborn girls Wendy.
Well, people started wanting to call it the girls Wendy since the book came out 100 years earlier.
Yeah, about 1905. But Creature Feature is almost like our worst nightmares from watching all those late show horror movies on TV during our youth that just comes to life. Leva has such a vivid imagination, not to mention a vast knowledge of the baby boomer world, and it shows up in every page of this book. Now, inspired by all those movies, comic books, and late shows, Leva gives the reader such a roller coaster ride of a read that would certainly belong in the pages of Amazing Stories magazine, but taken to a whole new level. And even the scenes with the proliferation of the creatures on the streets of Placidville has a tinge of timeliness to today's headlines that'll have you guessing what the parallels are. But rest assured, it doesn't deal with an imminent communist invasion that will have you rushing to your nearby fallout shelter. So, if you spent your formative years collecting Aurora Monster plastic model kits, like I did, was an avid reader of those EC Tales from the Crypt comic books, which was before my time, and watched The Outer Limits on TV or checked out the latest monster movies at your local theater every Saturday, which I did, then Creature Feature is the book for you, especially with Halloween just around the corner. But I would strongly advise to stay away from Placidville.
And the book again is?
Called Creature Feature, and it's by Stephen Paul Leva, published by Magpie Press. That's his brand new imprint, and it's $15.
And what other titles do you recommend in this genre?
Well, if you want to read more of Stephen Paul Leva, I highly recommend, and I think you will too, Peter, his first two books, which dealt with the hard-boiled detective, The Fixer.
I wrote them down right here to mention them if you were not going to mention them. Blood is Pretty and Hollywood is an All-Volunteer Army.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent books.
Oh, yes. I mean, he really gives a nice new twist to the hard-boiled genre that Mickey Spillane made famous about 60 years ago. And also, if you want a good horror read, I recommend Stephen King's The Stand. It's a huge book. Yes, it's a brick of a book. It's about 1,000 pages. But believe me, when I first read it in 1982, the expurgated version, which was about 800 pages, I couldn't put the book down. It's an apocalyptic novel, but it has that sort of thing like the banality of evil where, you know, some of the most, you know, ordinary people get caught up in the, you know, the worst horrific situation you could think about. Mm. Excellent book.
Well, you couldn't put it down because, well, it's almost the same size as you.
Yeah. Well, especially when it was reissued in 1990 with all the edited parts put right back in. Mm. Yeah, I needed the wheelbarrow for that one.
Okay. So again, this week's book is?
It's called Creature Feature, and it's by Stephen Paul Leva, and it's published by Magpie Press, and it's $15.
And that's Stephen with a V. And yeah. How can people find you?
Well, they won't find me in the Twilight Zone, that's for sure. Let's be grateful for that. But the page of the Montreal Times, published every week, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Wonder, do they set their clocks back in the Twilight Zone?
Let's see. Shadow and Substance, Time, Things and Ideas. And, yeah, well, that Twilight Zone clock goes backwards and forwards, in some frenetic pace. So who knows?
Mm. Well, thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Yes, thank you, Peter. And I'd like to thank Rod Serling, wherever he may be.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about into the home stretch here on the Stuff File program. I've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. And, of course, an idiot of the day here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. This next story, I'm just sharing because I like it so much. It warms the cockles of my heart. And, after all, who doesn't like their cockles warmed? Australian airline Qantas, which recently retired its fleet of Boeing 747 jets, is giving aviation fans the chance to bring a piece of the airline home by selling 1,000 fully stocked bar carts. The airline said the carts, which were removed from the planes before they were flown to California for their retirement, are stocked with goods including champagne, Australian wines, Tim Tam cookies, pajamas, and Qantas First Class Sheraton throw pillows. The carts are being sold for $685 each, or 169,000 Qantas points. The airline's 747s were in service for nearly 50 years before being retired 6 months earlier than planned due to the COVID-19 pandemic, said Phil Capps, Qantas's executive manager of product and service. There has been huge demand for Qantas 747 memorabilia, and frequent flyers have expressed keen interest to convert the bespoke in-flight trolley into everything from lamp stands to storage units. The fact that they come fully stocked with some of Qantas's most popular onboard service items will hopefully inspire some high-flying fun at home. Well, if people want to get nostalgic for the carts, they can just ram them into their knee. You know, this kind of reminds me of a couple of years ago here in Montreal when the Montreal Transit System held an auction for old items like fare boxes from buses to parts of old metro cars to all kinds of signage and beyond. It was a surprisingly massive hit. They're planning perhaps on doing that again at some point. Anyway, here's a little bit of advice for you. If the cops show up at your door for a domestic abuse call, don't tell them you're a federal officer and threaten to arrest them, especially if you're not a federal officer. A former U.S. Forestry Service employee was arrested and charged for doing just that in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. 52-year-old George Fusco is facing charges of disorderly conduct, impersonating an officer, reckless endangerment, simple assault, and making terroristic threats. Police were sent to a home in Mount Pleasant Township for a report of a dispute between Fusco and a 72-year-old female relative. When troopers arrived, investigators said the victim was outside hiding from Fusco behind a tree, saying that she was fearful for her life. Well, there's some irony. Hiding behind a tree from a former U.S. Forestry Service employee? Anyway, when police confronted Fusco, he identified himself as a federal law enforcement officer and said he would bring felony complaints against the four responding troopers. He allegedly claimed he was a lieutenant with a federal agency. Fusco continued to confront troopers at the home, raising his voice and flailing his arms in the faces of the troopers at the scene. He was taken into custody a short time later. Fusco, by the way, had resigned his position with the Federal Forestry Service at its office in the Allegheny National Forest back in July of 2019. He was a physical science technician with the agency. Well, now he's just branching out to stupidity. Which reminds me, it's time now for The Idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
47-year-old Alice Laverne Henry of Lake Wales, Florida, told a clerk at Griner's Jewelry in Winter Haven that she had found the ring she brought in to sell while treasure hunting on a beach. The clerk became suspicious when she noticed the ring, valued at more than $1,000, had no damage to it, and investigators later determined it was part of a collection that had been stolen from the very same store in a July burglary. Police also learned Alice had visited another jewelry store on several occasions in September, attempting to sell other rings from Griner's collection. She was arrested on October the 4th on charges of felony grand theft. Now, why, oh why, would you try to sell stolen jewelry back to the same jewelry store you stole it from earlier this summer? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0582. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0582. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep question to ponder. Who did we compare babies to before Winston Churchill?